What happens when legislators go after a legendary state employee who's been on the job for more than 50 years? We'll get the answer to that question, chat about the transition from Governor Brownback to Governor Collier, and talk to Senate Majority Leader Jim Denning about why he was so ticked off after Brownback's recent State of the State address. I'm Jim McLean, and this is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. So we kick off a new season of Statehouse Blend the way we start every installment, checking in with Stephen Caranda. Stephen, of course, is the longtime Statehouse Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radio, one of our Kansas News Service partners. Stephen lives, at least during the workday, in the basement of the Statehouse in what's affectionately known as the Garden Level Media Suite. Hey, Stephen.
Hello there. I'm glad to know I'm finally a long time in this job.
I think you qualify. It's probably obvious to everybody listening, but I'll ask anyway, what made the biggest headlines this week?
Well, we have a date. We have a time when Governor Brownback will be leaving and actually joining the Trump administration, which, you know, answers so many questions we've been having, which is, when will the lieutenant governor be proposing new plans? When will he actually be leaving? There's still a lot of challenges here in the session, but at least now the new governor, Jeff Collier, will be able to start tackling them.
And that vote took place, and it was a very close vote in the U.S. Senate. I mean, literally, the Vice President Pence had to break the tie.
Which is probably not the way they wanted the vote to go, but as, you know, we know from the hearing process that we had earlier, Democrats had expressed concern about, for example, here in Kansas, where he had taken away LGBT worker protections from state workers.
Right. I was surprised still, though, he got no Democratic votes. In the event, his nomination was confirmed, and he is leaving, and you said we have a date. What is that date?
January 31st,
okay.
3 p.m., the exact time Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier is being sworn in Topeka.
You know, everybody says now he has to use this time in the governor's office to separate himself from the Brownback legacy. And you recently talked to soon-to-be Governor Collier. And did he get at all specific or explicit about, you know, what kind of change he's planning?
Well, as you know, Jim, and probably a lot of people who are familiar with the news know, he has been really unspecific
cryptic. When
it comes to everything.
Yeah, cryptic,
just saying things like, you know, we're changing the tone, we're listening, but not getting into any specifics.
Right.
So this is the first time I got a little bit of specifics out of him. I asked him on the big issues, the budget, K-12 funding, is he going to be doing anything different from what we've heard from Governor Brownback? And his response was, quote, "The governor had made some proposals. I think they've moved the ball some. The legislature is doing a study right now on K-12 education,"
right,
he's referring to, "and he wants to get all the information on the table before they start working on some solutions."
Collier isn't the only one in the Statehouse who wants to see that study before sitting down to figure out a budgetary fix. We talk with Senator Jim Denning later about his forecast for education spending in 2018. But first, some legislators triggered a backlash from teachers, superintendents, and four ex-Kansas governors by attempting to suspend a longtime state official. If you've been following the story, you might be asking, who is Dale Dennis and why all the fuss about him?
Well, the average Kansan may never have heard of him. In education circles, he is very well known.
That's Kansas News Service education reporter Celia Yopis-Jepson. She joins me to explain why the State Board of Education rallied to the defense of this 50-year veteran of the Kansas Department of Education.
So Dale Dennis, yes, he has been with the Kansas State Department of Education for more than half a century now. He started there in 1967. He is the head of school finance for the state, and considering that education is our biggest public institution, I think you could easily make an argument this is Kansas's most beloved public servant.
And he's chock full of personality. I go back at the State House, I think 1981 was my first session, and I remember Dale very well through the years. But he got himself in some hot water with legislative leaders. What did he stand accused of, Celia?
So an audit came out last month by Legislative Post Audit, also a very well-respected institution, saying that KSDE has been distributing more money for bus transportation costs than is allowed by law. Over the past 5 years alone, that was an extra $45 million. And then if you look at the fact that this practice has been in place for decades, since the 80s at least, if not the 70s, then, you know, legislative leaders are saying this could be upwards of $300 million that taxpayers ended up paying extra.
So let me get this straight. The school finance formula is pretty complicated. It always has been. And there's a separate part of the formula that dictates how much money goes to school districts to cover transportation costs?
Yes, there is. And what's kind of at issue here is KSDE was using an interpretation of that formula that they say was kind of the direction given to them verbally by lawmakers who worked on this decades ago. But that interpretation, according to the auditors, is not specified in law, and it results in certain school districts receiving more money.
Okay. All right. So I'm starting to get the picture now. Dale Dennis, who's been on the scene for a long time, gets some direction, some verbal direction from legislators back in the 80s, and it changes the way he allocates this money, and he does it that way from then right on through now. An audit blows the whistle on it. And then legislative leaders, Senate President Susan Weigel and House Speaker Ron Reichman in particular, use this audit then to say this is inappropriate, and they want to hold Dale Dennis accountable. Is that correct?
They're saying this was not something that was meant to be personal, although some people are interpreting it that way. So here's House Speaker Ron Reichman, for example.
This was not intended to be about him. It was intended about protecting the integrity of our laws and in our institution.
In any event, all of this led to a really extraordinary meeting late last week. The State Board of Education called a special meeting to dig into this.
The Commissioner of Education, Randy Watson, technically he has the power to act on this or not. He chose to seek the advice of the State Board of Education.
Probably a pretty good idea.
I think that that's probably safe to say. They went into executive session. In total, they were behind closed doors having conversations about potential, I think they used the word litigation around this. They came out and by a vote of 9-1, the state board are, 10 elected officials, they voted to tell the commissioner to, that they were supporting Dale Dennis and his staff fully. So it's worth noting that the State Board of Education is predominantly Republican. So here's one of those Republicans explaining his thought process and why he voted to support Dale Dennis. This is Ken Willard. He is from Hutchinson.
It seems to me that considering what we've heard today and the agreement that was made back in the 80s, that this modification or interpretation of the formula would be used, that the burden of responsibility for correcting that situation lied with the legislature, and that some fix should have been taken at that time.
So at the end of the day, the State Board of Education is pretty firm with one dissenting vote, instructing Randy Watson to take no disciplinary action against Dale Dennis, and that is indeed then what happened?
Yeah. Randy Watson said afterwards he will be taking their guidance, and he will not be suspending Dale Dennis.
But what happens with the underlying question in terms of how the money then gets distributed to the school district? Is there going to be any change in the way Dale has been doing it all these years, or—
Right. I think it's safe to say this is far from over. So for now, KSDE, they had agreed with the auditors to change what they're doing and fit with what the auditors say needs to be done. But they were going to basically give school districts a bit of notice. So this wouldn't happen overnight because, as I mentioned, some districts would lose a lot of money. Now, that might not happen, though, because there are proposals in the legislature to put into law—
To codify what
Dale
was
exactly.
doing.
Yes, exactly. So— And in the meantime, it's also worth noting that there could be other audits going forward. Even if there was no suspension right now, as Weigel and Reichman wanted, the legislature can direct its auditing staff to continue looking into how KSDE interprets any number of legislative formulas. So it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward. And there was also a motion on the State Board of Education to put forward by March proposals for how to ensure that KSDE's processes are transparent.
And we can count on Celia Yopis-Jepson to keep us in touch with whatever happens next. She's the education reporter for the Kansas News Service. And Celia, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
My budget recommendations includes an additional $600 million in funding over the next 5 years. My proposal does not include a tax increase.
That snippet from Governor Brownback's State of the State address left many lawmakers stunned, and Senate Majority Leader Jim Denning angry.
His financial acumen, as we know, is very low, but this is reckless. He's given everybody a sense of false hope that he's just solved the school issue when he's made it a hell of a lot worse.
We sat down last week with a much calmer Jim Denning in his statehouse office and asked him what about the governor's $600 million proposal had him so ticked off.
Several reasons. One, having a $600 million spending bill with no ability to pay for it was troubling to me. And then on the school finance, you know, we're to the point now that we're refreshing our studies to get some advice on structure and adequacy. And I was hoping that we would have those studies back before we started talking about any more financial commitment.
You know, there were some people who were quite happy to hear the governor put that $600 million figure out there. What I hear you saying is that you didn't want that benchmark out there in an official capacity until you had some additional information, some additional data that were that maybe you could come up with a different figure and a rationale for shooting for a different figure. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, we haven't had the studies, the school studies updated. Some of them are 10, 15 years old, the two that the Supreme Court looks to. And many things have changed. The education standards changed significantly in 2010. And by that standard changing in 2010, the cost function studies they're still accurate as far as the structure, but with a big assumption like that changing, they're no longer accurate.
So do you think that at the end of the day that you could put much less than $600 million in over a period of time and still satisfy the court?
When you read the last court opinion, they said that they didn't want to be complacent actors. And the body is taking that, and everybody that watches it, is that they're looking for a one lump sum in one fiscal year to get it up to some level that they consider adequate.
And what about the idea of the constitutional amendment? Again, you've been back and forth with the court now for several years, and there was some sentiment among the legislature to want to rewrite the state constitution so that the court in the future wouldn't hold so much sway over these school finance decisions. Is that something that's still on the table?
The constitutional amendment idea is certainly on the table. And my personal logic on that is we've been in litigation with the school finance formula and the plaintiff attorneys for 24 years. The first court document filings were 28 pages. This last court document filing was up to 880 pages, and the plaintiff attorneys were paid $6.1 million since 2010. And all the fight is over two words, you know, suitable provision. And it's to the point now where this uncertainty of the Supreme Court ruling and the 24 years of litigation and ongoing, it's affecting our ability to govern. We don't know how to build a budget. We don't know if we can appropriate money to Medicaid for children or mental health, and the Supreme Court come back and take it all away.
I know it's still on the table and something you'd like to see, but is it realistic to think that that can happen?
Well, it's early on. We certainly don't have two-thirds votes at this point in time. And we may not need an amendment if we can show that the studies are valid and we could put less than $600 million, that we could put something in that the state could actually afford. And I think one of the plaintiff's comments was, well, it doesn't matter if the state can afford it or not. I expect my $600 million. So that kind of shows you the tone that we're dealing with. But it is factual. The state cannot put $600 million additional funds into K-12 in one lump sum. It's an impossible ask.
The state's attorney has said that you really should have something, a plan, by March the 1st. Is it realistic to be still shooting for that deadline?
We will not make the March 1st deadline. We haven't. I think the AG has until April 30th to have his work ready for the Supreme Court. But we'll certainly make the end of March for the AG. So he won't have the extra 2 or 3 weeks that he wanted, but he'll still have plenty of time to be adequately prepared to respond to the Supreme Court's concerns.
Very good. Jim Denning, thank you very much for being a willing guest on State House Plan. Once again, we hope that you'll come back in the future.
Will do. Thanks for having us.
And that's State House Plan Kansas for this week. If, like me, you're missing Sam Zeff and wondering where he went, Well, he's now covering the KC Metro for KCUR. But he's still producing his podcast on Kansas history, Archiver. It's really good, so if you haven't subscribed to it, you should. I'm Jim McLean. Thanks for listening, and make sure to come back next week.